Girl, am I an outdoors gay now that I went whitewater rafting once?
Are you, if you need something else to make your whole personality, then sure. You can have it.
I really suffered. I was so cold by the end of it that when the guide gave me a hoodie and I changed out of my like river shirt, yeah. I started to cry because of the kindness of it.
But it was fun. It was I mean, you lived to tell the tale.
I lived to tell the tale.
Okay, good, good, good.
The water was 40 degrees. I've never been so cold.
Yeah, I don't think you can go from talking shit to the outside to now being like, I love the outside
now.
Because there are people who are like, wait a second. No. But I'm glad you had fun.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Hi, Jillian Bensavalli.
Hi, Patrick Hines.
Can I say something?
Sure.
Okay, yesterday I dropped the first two episodes of my new podcast. It's called the Golden Girls Deep Dive Podcast.
Yeah.
I make it with Jennifer Samard, Broadway's Jennifer Samard. And I'd love it if the listeners want to, if they would go check it out. It's not just a funny recap show, though it is that. We have a full-time researcher on staff, so we get a full dossier on the episode. We wring every little piece of trivia and information out of the episode, and each episode ends with a researched deep dive into something from the Golden Girls universe.
Fun.
Yeah. It's really fun. If you love the Golden Girls, if you love me, if you love Broadway, you're going to like it.
Great.
Just go find Golden Girls Deep Dive Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast.
Excellent.
Also, fam, join us over on the Pates real quick if
you
got a sec.
Sure, yeah,
if you want over 350 full ad-free bonus apps, if you want drag bingo.
Yeah, so we do like virtual drag bingo, and then we have these bonus apps, so it's like ad-free versions of what you hear on the regular feed, and then we do like Quiet on Set and all the ones that have like multiple episodes.
Yeah, yes, Quiet on Set, the Twin Flames one, we're doing
love
the Jinx Part 2.
Yeah, we're
Jinx
doing
Part 2. I know you're girding your loins for Jinx Part 2.
Me or them?
You. I can. Every time we talk about it, you're like, oh God, here we go.
There's a lot and then also nothing and also a lot. But we're doing it. The point is, we're doing it. You can find it on the Patreon.
Yeah. Girl, we got to tell them, just real quick, we never do this, but we are taking next week off. There's no regular episode next Tuesday.
Yes, but there will be a Patreon episode on Friday, and that's the Jinx Episode 2.
The Jinx Part 2 Episode 2. It's wild.
Sorry, the Jinx Part 2 episode 2. Yeah, he's a whole lot of things. He's many things. We have words for him. So if you'd like to listen to some of those words, Friday, we got you. But no episode on Tuesday, unfortunately.
Nope. All right, girl, what are we talking about today?
All right, very, very, very highly requested.
Yeah.
What Jennifer did on Netflix.
911, Drew.
Help me, please. I need help.
Calm down. What's going on?
So I'm broken and I heard shots. I don't know what's happening. I'm tied upstairs. Dad?
Hello?
I'm okay. I'm alive.
A woman is dead and her husband injured after a home invasion in Markham.
There was a knock at the door, then three gunmen burst inside.
They dragged me down the stairs and then I heard two pops.
We don't get a lot of homicides in Markham, so it's like a grenade going off.
Investigators are not ruling out any scenario, including the possibility the men broke into the wrong home.
We're only going to have one witness, and that is the daughter, Jennifer Pan.
Why would you leave a surviving witness? It doesn't make sense. Something's not right about this. Now, I want to know everything about her.
I gotta tell you, when this dropped on Netflix, it came out of nowhere, and then all of a sudden, everybody was talking about it.
Yeah. There's a lot here. There's also a lot not here. There's things left out. We're gonna talk about some of the controversies.
Oh,
we're gonna
really?
get into it all.
I know nothing about the controversies.
There's like one kind of maybe controversy. If it's real, it's really fucking bad. And if it's not, then I don't know.
When are we talking about it?
When we get there.
Okay,
soon
you're not
enough.
You promise you won't forget?
It's in big, bold, red highlighted letters. There's no way I'm forgetting.
It's like how I live my life?
Yeah, essentially.
Bold red highlighted letters.
It's like, do not forget.
Do not forget. So we're in Markham, Ontario. We're in Canada. Is that how you say it?
How many people would you like to piss off in this episode already? Because you're co-opting the outside.
I know. I love Canada so much. I bet there's great whitewater rafting there.
Canada's beautiful. Sure,
I don't know why I said it like that.
I don't, because it was like you were trying to do some bits.
I was trying to be funny, and I also feel like Canada is our friend, so we can be silly with each other.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
We like Canada.
We meet Detective Bill. He says it was a late night. He just got into bed. The phone rings.
He's counted like three sheep. His head just hit the pillow.
I gotta tell you, Detective Bill gives us some like moments of levity in this thing, like maybe one or two.
Yeah.
That are pretty well timed. His timing is good. Give him a podcast.
Yeah. Well.
Okay. Oh no. Is he part of the information?
No, he's not.
Okay. Tell us what you're feeling.
I'm just feeling Like, I think there's a lot at play at this in the story is okay. All I feel.
Okay. Oh, my God. I feel like...
And my stomach really hurts me today.
Yeah, that's true. She's having a bad stomach day.
Like a weird... Yeah. I got... The cramps are cramping. What am I going to say? What am I going to lie about it? Bears will bear, cramps will cramp. And here I am.
Cramps will cramp should be merch.
I don't even want to think about it anymore. They've been cramping all day. Give me a break.
I love you.
I love you.
You look like Emil Bazelle.
Thanks. Oh, that's really nice to hear, especially
it's really
when your
true.
Uterus is trying to destroy you from within.
I know.
I should text, but I want like dill pickle chips. That's what you know, because now, because like the cravings are coming in too.
Yeah,
the,
that
like,
sounds
hormones.
Dill pickle chips.
Yeah.
That sounds really
They're
good.
Amazing. Anyway, sorry for the detours.
Well, Mr. Bill learns.
I mean, Markham's a very family oriented area, very low crime rate. I mean, less than you would see around the rest of Canada. But now they're telling me we've had a double shooting. It's a very violent scene.
And so, like, now out of nowhere, there's a double shooting?
Yes.
And one person is dead. Her name is Bic Pan. And another person is hospitalized, and his name is Han Pan.
Yes.
He's been shot in the head, and he's in an induced coma. I do want to say I apologize in advance for my pronunciation. I was on YouTube today looking up how to pronounce these Vietnamese names. So sometimes I got conflicting information, which was odd. So I'm trying my best, but I apologize. But here we are.
So the only witness to this crime is Han Pan and Bic Pan's daughter, Jennifer. And so, you know, Han Pan, the dad, he's still alive. He may or may not be able to be a witness to, as to what happened, but right now they've got Jennifer. So Jennifer is in the interview room. It's day one. She's a wreck. Obviously, she suffered a major trauma, and she's being interviewed by a guy named Randy Slade.
Yeah. And what's also interesting is that she has an older brother that we never hear about in this documentary.
Is that right?
She's got an older brother.
Okay. Yeah, we never hear about him.
Felix.
Jennifer gives us a timeline of the evening. She said her mom was making dinner. Her mom was going to go out line dancing that night, which she does every Monday.
Every Monday.
I love it.
I love it. I love a scheduled weekly activity.
And she does it like without her husband. I love that she like does it on her own.
This
it's
is
great.
Her me time. I love it.
I love
She's
it
She's going
too.
Line dancing.
But after dinner, Jennifer goes up to her bedroom. She turns on the TV. She's on the phone with a friend. Her mom gets home from line dancing around 9:30. She did the achy breaky.
Mm-hmm.
Mom is calling. And then all of a sudden, the mom is like calling for the dad.
Right, calling for the dad to come downstairs.
Yes.
And Jennifer says, that's when I peered out of my bedroom door. And Jennifer says that a man was there. This man grabs Jennifer, ties her arms, says, I have a gun behind your back. Do what I say or you'll get hurt. Show me where the money is.
Right.
And so immediately this becomes all about the money, specifically from Jennifer's mom's purse.
And like the mom is really confused because now the parents are Vietnamese immigrants. Jennifer is first generation.
Yeah.
The parents, according to Jennifer, don't speak English very well. So the man is asking for her wallet. She keeps trying to give him her purse because it's getting lost in translation.
Well, hey, dumb man, the wallet's usually in the purse.
Right,
idiot.
Right,
don't
exactly,
yell at her.
Exactly. But now Jennifer is saying,
at that point, they had taken me and they tied me to the top of the banisters. I could still move, but I was afraid to because the one guy just had that gun. Just next thing I know, I think I hear my parents going down the stairs and my mom was asking them for me to come with them. They wouldn't let me come with them.
And then Jennifer hears, she's upstairs tied to the banister. We will get into this in a minute. I did it myself at home. We'll get into it.
Yeah.
But Jennifer then hears the men saying, you know, you lied to us. So now the men seemingly know her parents. They've come to collect this money. There's a lot of yelling. And then Jennifer says she heard two pops. She says my mom screamed. Jennifer yells for her mom. There are more pops. She's talking about gunshots.
Right.
That's what
exactly.
She's describing.
Jennifer, in telling the story, is having a really hard time. And I said, look at this. Detective Bill actually, like, gives a shit about her mental health. Like, right now, they're thinking Jennifer's just a witness and she's the only one who might be able to tell them what happened. They need her to tell the story, but they also want to make sure they're not pushing her too hard that she's just going to completely collapse.
Right. So enter Detective Deborah Gladding. She's a victim liaison officer. Yes.
Which I was like, is that normal in Canada and we just don't have those here?
That is a thing here. I've gotten phone calls from them once.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They will call like sort of periodically. I've never said, can we talk?
Right.
But I've gotten like checkup phone calls after like if I had to file a report for something.
Interesting.
Yeah, I was surprised. I was surprised to get the phone call myself. So it's, I don't know. I didn't know about it really.
Deborah, the victim liaison officer, she doesn't go into the interview room. Jennifer doesn't even know she's there. Deborah is watching the interrogation from another room. I think she's just there to be an advocate for Jennifer should she need a break. Whatever it is, she wants to make sure that this is being handled the right way.
Yeah, because Deborah describes her job saying, you know, she's the point of contact for victims. She said, if they're ever having a difficult time, you're always on call. Like, yes. Deborah is there for Jennifer. Her job literally is to be there for Jennifer if she needs her during this traumatic time.
Yeah, exactly.
So Jennifer is saying more things about what happened. She says there were three men.
Can you describe his race to me?
Yes, he was black with dreadlocks.
Okay, and number two guy?
He had a hoodie, but I could tell that he was darker than the first guy.
So he's a male black as well?
But thinner build. And then another one with Jamaican accent.
Okay.
She describes them. One of them had dreadlocks, she says. She says one has a Jamaican accent and one has a thinner build. She has no idea how they got into the house.
Well, because there was no doorbell and there was no kicked in door. Like, there was no forced entry. The cops have been at the house. They can see. So somebody let them in, or they got in somehow without ringing the doorbell and without breaking in anywhere.
Right. So they're like, did they know the parents then?
Right.
And then the other question is like, okay, well, it seems to be all about the money. Did the family have a lot of money? And the answer is like, kind of, not really.
The answer is like, no, except for the fact that we learned that the mom drives a Lexus and the dad drives a Mercedes. Jennifer says, and he loves that baby.
Yeah. So like, they don't keep a lot of cash in the house. And I'm like, no one really does. It's like a bank. If you rob a bank, like, there's not like $20,000 in the bank anymore.
Exactly.
They learned our lesson from all the bank robberies.
Incredibly rich people have like thousands of dollars in the safe to buy off burglars.
Bury it in the woods.
Look, I've been saying this for years. If you're making millions of dollars, bury at least $1 million in the woods. Yeah. Then it's always there.
But everyone's point is like, yeah, they splurged on the cars. They had a nice house. They made nice livings, but there was nothing extravagant.
Because they were an immigrant, like a hardworking immigrant family who like saved a lot of money and they were able to buy like a couple of nice things for themselves.
And so what the cops are saying is like, the point is, they really wouldn't be targets for a home invasion that's all about the money.
Exactly.
Because Jennifer's quotes are, where the money? Why'd you lie? Like, who? Like, what?
But Detective Bill does wonder out loud in a sort of offensive way. Like, was this, like, do they live some sort of secret nefarious life? Is he into gambling or drugs or whatever?
No. And no. I got news for you. It's not Satanists in the woods either, buddy.
I know we gotta ask every question.
I understand.
But you know what? Occam's razor is a thing.
You
know what I mean?
The most simplest option is the answer, right?
Correct. That
is,
exactly.
Wait, how do you spell it? Occam's? O-C-C-A-M-Z?
I think there's an L, but I don't really know.
So there's a Z in there, aside from razor? No.
Nobody knows. Anyway, Jennifer, in the interrogation, says,
he said to my father, you lied to us. You lied to us. You just had to cooperate. And then they shot him.
All you had to do was cooperate, and then they shot. Because they're saying, like, why would they have killed your parents? And Jennifer's saying, like, they thought my parents weren't cooperating.
Right, and what's also weird is that nothing was taken from the house.
Right.
And the cops find hundreds of dollars in cash and all these valuables and a nice camera, and it's like, oh, they came for the money, and then they, what, left it all?
I love, because this is where they're showing us the crime scene photos, and they show us the area of the living room where Jennifer's mom had pulled out a bucket to soak her feet after a long night of line dancing.
Self-care, this is going to sound like a joke, but I mean it. Self-care comes in all kinds of ways.
I agree.
Sometimes it's line dancing. Sometimes it's line dancing plus the feet soak after.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that's all part of the routine.
And it was like clearly a pink foot tub soaking bucket.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Is there any other kind?
No.
If there is, I don't want it. I want a bath bomb in there.
Yes.
I like the works. If I'm doing it, it's Monday.
Have you ever specifically soaked your feet?
No, only if I've like ever treated myself to like a pedicure and that in that situation, but I've never done it myself. No.
One time when I was a kid, we had a back deck and we used to put this 2x4 up on the deck and like try to slide down it. I was running.
Oh, I've like put my feet in water.
Well, no, what I was going to say was I was running down the 2x4. I got a splinter in my big toe.
No!
It was awful.
That sucks.
And we couldn't get it out. So my mom made me go and soak my foot in the bathtub to see if it would get it out. It didn't.
It didn't.
But
did it make it worse?
No, it didn't make it worse, but it didn't make it better.
Okay.
My mom still had to take the tweezers and really dig it out.
That sucks.
Like, dig it. Imagine my lesbian mother with her tweezers just like holding my foot as
just
like
no time for
little
it.
11-year-old screaming
somehow.
Queen of a boy.
Yeah.
Just, you know.
You're like, hey, mom, the foot soaking didn't work. This is on you, girl.
I know.
What do you want me to do?
My mom was really flying by the seat of her pants. You know what I mean?
It's the summer. Who cares? But again, you live to tell the tale. You
live
survived.
To tell the tale. Anyway.
So they're screaming about money and then they left.
But there's also stuff here that ought to have been taken, some valuables that weren't touched. There's a safe and a very expensive camera in the closet. There's a wallet with a bunch of $20 bills that certainly would have been taken if it was cash related.
hundreds and hundreds of dollars in cash. Like, what's going on
expensive
here?
Cameras. There's, like, electronics all over the place. Like, Detective Bill is like, this was not a home invasion for a robbery.
The cops are like, great. After interview one, more questions than answers.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah, exactly. Importantly, at the end of day one, they ask her if there's anything else she can think of that would be helpful, and she says no.
The answer to that is a lawyer.
Right.
But...
And this but blows my mind.
She's another one. She has 9 interviews and no lawyer.
No lawyer. The lies they're able to tell her to get them to get her to say what they want. It's wild.
And it's interesting. I don't know. You would think that someone like a victim liaison would tell her that a lawyer would be a thing. And
right.
I love that Deborah's here. I think Deborah's awesome. I don't know the protocol there. They even say they're like, in Canada, we're allowed to lie a lot.
Oh, it's true.
So she probably didn't know that. But I'm just curious, like, if someone has the victim's back, then...
I was thinking about this, though. I feel like the victim liaison isn't necessarily there for the victim. It's there so that the police can say we did everything by the book because the victim liaison didn't stop us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
The person who called me sounded pretty bored, if I'm being honest with you.
Well, and Deborah is saying all the right things. I think she really believes Jennifer. She does want to do a good job, but I'm sure her job has limitations. I'm sure she's not allowed to like hinder the other police work.
And I don't mean to talk shit about Deborah because I think her job is very important.
But you make a solid point.
I'm just, you know, they have questions. I have questions.
We all got questions.
We're working
here.
Through it together. Day two, Detective David does a large-scale canvas of the neighborhood, looking for witnesses, trying to get information about the family. And the information is like, this is a really safe area. We all love each other. Super diverse. Like,
but like at the same time, the neighborhood is on high alert because they believe there's 3 crazed lunatic murderers running around the community.
Right.
And like this always happens. Everyone's like, no one is safe.
No one is safe. You know what I mean? Right, right.
Like if 3 men can just break into this house and kill 2 people in broad daylight, you know what I mean?
Right. Then because what everyone is saying is like, they were generous. They were hardworking people. They were honest. They definitely weren't involved in anything where like they would owe money to people who would knock on their door in the middle of the night.
Exactly.
So if that's the case, if this could happen to the Pan family, it could happen to any of us.
Right.
And that's why it's so scary.
And they say like when something like this happens, it's like a grenade going off. Because of course it would be. Like you would never go outside ever again.
No. So after 6 hours of canvassing the neighborhood, they finally get some information about a guy named Danny Wong.
He is a drug dealer. And he's recently been in a relationship with Jennifer Pan.
An ex-boyfriend with some shady dealings is a significant detail. I mean, she should have provided information about that.
Jennifer failed to mention this.
And they specifically said, hey, Jennifer, by the way, is there anything at the end of this first interview that you think might be helpful that we should look into? She does not mention the ex-boyfriend who also deals drugs.
But her ex-boyfriend is also a huge part of her life.
Yes.
In so many ways. We'll explain it.
Yes.
So by day 3, they're like, we got to get Danny in here and ask him a couple questions.
And I got to tell you, like, number one, he gives his consent for the interview to be recorded.
He looks right into the camera.
But also, like, we don't require that here.
Different kinds of lies.
Right. I'm just saying that, like, you know, like, he has to give, like, what if he said no? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I guess it's, like, I'm here sitting, talking to you, lawyerless.
No lawyer. And he tells them that at the time of the break-in, he was home sleeping. He says he remembers getting home on that, it was a Monday night, sometime between 9 and 10:30. And he says, and I believed him, you know, because they ask him, like, you've been in trouble for drugs before, right? And he says, I have been in trouble for drugs, possession and trafficking one time, but the first time I got in trouble, I stopped.
Well, Lord, it was like a gram. It's not trafficking, and no one's dying over a gram of weed.
It's weed. It's like they make this guy sound like a hardened like heroin or cocaine trafficker.
No, he's not.
And also, like, he seems not like a tough guy. Like, just in the interview we're watching, he like seems like a kind, like, you could convince me that this guy's not a killer. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Okay.
For now, yeah. Well, what's his relationship to Jennifer though, right?
Yeah.
So they dated at the end of high school and then kept dating until about 2 years ago.
7 years total.
Yeah, they were kind of on and off, you know, when you're like a teenager.
Yeah.
But 7 years is still a really, really long time. And they broke up because of, quote, a big issue with her parents. And we will learn about Jennifer's parents that they are very, very, very strict.
Yeah. She's secretly dating this guy.
Yeah.
And the parents find out. We'll get more into that. But like, they break up and she wants to keep secretly dating him. And he says to her, like, girl, there's nothing we can really do about this. Like, we should kind of just go our own separate ways.
Yeah. Danny says
her parents were very strict. They pretty much drove her to the path where there's no time for a relationship.
Is there other reasons?
Probably because I didn't make enough money. Like, I was working at Boston Pizza and they didn't approve of that.
because he was working at a pizza joint named Boston Pizza. I know. And I was like, all the cities to choose from.
I gotta tell you, when I was like, I went to college in Emerson.
Yeah.
And we, like, which is in Boston, and right across the street from us was a place called New York Pizza.
There you go.
You're eating New York Pizza in Boston, but it was clearly not New York Pizza.
Just New York Pizza by name. I've had lovely, fantastic pizza all over this great country of ours, this shitty country
because
of ours.
Because there's a Pizzeria Uno everywhere.
Oh, God. That's not the same. That's corporate pizza.
I know.
Corporate pizza is different. Corporate pizza, like Domino's, you need ranch. A real slice of pizza.
Yes.
You don't need ranch.
I'm just saying, you're making the good point that he works at a place in
Canada.
In Canada called Boston Pizza.
I'm just saying, of all the cities in all the world,
I know.
Boston Pizza. It's an interesting choice, and that's not saying shit about Boston. I love Boston. I've had pizza there, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. How about that?
Okay, great.
I don't know what the name of the place was called.
No, it was probably the New York Pizza across the street from the little building at Emerson College.
I'd probably be like, no, I want the real authentic Boston pizza. Give me the real deal. Danny and Jennifer were together for 7 years, but something that really stuck out to me is that he was like, in all of those 7 years, I never so much as had a meal with her parents.
No.
Which is, like, they didn't have a relationship at all.
They were dating secretly. You know what I mean?
And
they're like, they couldn't have a meal. And I feel like that's kind of, like, by the end of this relationship, he has a new girl named Christine who I think he really likes. And so when Jen is saying to him, like, I want to stay with you, he's kind of like, your parents hate me. They don't want us to be together. It's making your life miserable. And I have this new girl that I like anyway.
And I think Danny was leading her on a little bit, Jennifer.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, I think there was a lot of like, well, yeah, you can come over and hang out, but like, I still like Christine. So Danny is currently dating Christine.
Yeah.
But he and Jennifer still talk and they hang out from time to time. You know, because they would be checking in on each other.
Yes.
Because the two of them were getting harassed by a private phone number up to and including 2 days ago.
Right.
Jennifer was interviewed by the police 2 days ago.
Right.
She's not mentioning.
Exactly. And like, but also like this all went down 2 days ago. They haven't been getting the text and the phone calls since then.
Like, so what would happen is a number would call.
They just call and then I'd answer and then it'd just go quiet for like about 10 seconds and then it'll hang up. And it would happen over and over, and like it got ridiculous. It was like 100 times, up to 100 times.
And then it went from hangouts to text messages saying what?
Saying, we're watching you.
Over and over and over again, like 100 times.
Who is answering numbers you don't know? Who does that?
I don't answer numbers I do know.
Don't I know it?
Like,
don't I know it?
When was the last time I didn't answer a FaceTime from you?
All right, you're right. I can't pull a name out of a hat. You're right, but I'm gonna FaceTime you at 2 a.m, so I got an answer next time.
Okay. Can't wait. But they would. This person would do this like 100 times, and then the calls would also be. They would be texting them like, I'm watching you, and I asked myself aloud to nobody.
Hey, me.
Like, I was like, hey, mate, can you text from a private number? Yes, you can, according to Google.
Oh, really?
I was like, because a private number, like, what would it even come up in the text message?
But apparently
it's possible to do.
Mine is more to the point of, like, if you're getting text messages from a private number saying, we're watching you,
right.
Why aren't you going to the police with that?
Uh-huh.
Why are the police just hearing about it for the first time now?
Because now things start to escalate. Like, Jennifer didn't say anything about this in her first interview, but now she's saying, you know, Jennifer would meet Danny for lunch and the text would be like, what is she doing? Here,
yes.
Go away. The last text that Danny got was bang, 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 ha, ha, ha.
Right.
Absolutely terrifying.
And like, you didn't, Danny, why are the cops coming to you? So your ex-girlfriend's mother is shot and killed. Her father is shot and lives. You just got a text from a private number that says bang, 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 ha, ha, ha. You're not going to the cops with that?
Now, if all you got was one single text that said bang, 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 ha, 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 that's terrifying.
Yeah.
Now, but this person was allegedly harassing them hundreds and hundreds of phone calls, and that has now escalated to bang, bang, bang. That is, oh my God.
But then somebody that you know actually gets shot and killed. Why aren't you going to, none of this makes any sense.
None of this makes any sense. So this is definitely something, right?
Yeah, like, and it's been happening for months.
Right, they're getting these messages and then a week later, Jennifer's parents are both shot. Like,
right.
But then also Jennifer and Danny didn't say anything about it and it's all kind of coming out in the wash, as they say.
And it's also just making him look like you must be associated, like this can't all be a coincidence. But he's saying,
so do you feel that what happened the other night is something to do with you, right? Because I'm
more than 95 to 99% sure that has nothing to do with my drugs.
That's a pretty bold statement, though.
Yep. I'm pretty sure about
it. How can you say that?
Because for marijuana, no one's going to shoot you for like a gram.
It's a gram.
No one is killing anybody over a gram of pot.
Like, give me a break. So once again, more questions than answers,
yes.
Right? So the cops are like, all right, we need to learn everything we can about Jennifer because there are red flags here.
Yes.
There just are.
It's like, who are her friends? Who's she hanging out with? Is there something in her background that could help explain why this incident took place?
So this is important and part of the controversy that I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
So we meet one of her high school friends named Nam, and he's like, we were really good friends in high school. They went on a lot of school trips together. They would hang out on the weekends. She was great to talk to. She was bubbly, happy, confident, genuine. Now, in these photos that Netflix is showing, Netflix is accused by people online of using AI to edit the photos of Jennifer, where Jennifer has, like, you know, giving like the peace sign,
oh,
or she's smiling. So
I mean, I will say, especially in the end credits, the pictures are stunning of her.
Right. But people don't like these two in particular.
Okay.
One of with a big smile and like a peace sign, and she's sort of like sticking her tongue out. People said her fingers look weird in one, which I guess is something that AI can't do yet. Like finger, like that's,
yep,
a telltale sign
we
that
saw
it's been
that
edited.
In, like, the Kate Middleton controversy.
Yeah. Oh God.
Well, can't wait for that doc.
Like, which is like forthcoming.
Is it really?
I'm sure. I don't know.
It's from the Gwyneth ski trial people.
Please. But like her teeth supposedly looked weird in another. Now, but this was just people saying like Netflix did this.
Yeah.
Just saying that they did it and this is a horrible thing. To use AI to edit in like a true crime thing, like,
yeah,
not cool, right?
Totally.
So the producer, Jeremy Grimaldi, responded in an interview saying, you know, any filmmaker will use different tools like Photoshop.
Yeah.
And he says, and I quote, the photos of Jennifer are real photos of her. The foreground is exactly her. The background has been anonymized to protect the source. That's a word, anonymized, I just heard.
Okay.
So basically, he said that the only editing they did was what was behind Jennifer, like the bookshelves and other,
uh-huh,
photos in the background to make sure that their source was protected.
Because like the source is like in the picture.
That's what they said. People aren't really buying it, but Netflix hasn't said anything. This,
yeah,
like the internet was kind of like, that's AI, like that's unethical. This was the response, but it's kind of been like a major conversation. I know people were messaging me, making sure that we discussed it.
We got into it.
I gotcha.
So Nam is talking a lot about Daniel and saying that like Daniel, like their relationship had highs and lows. They were always breaking up and getting back together. And he says, I don't think Daniel was the best boyfriend. And like, this is a really important story, I think. Nam is saying that Jennifer once worked all summer to save up a few $1,000s.
And she said she spent it all on a paintball gun for him. I couldn't even fathom, you know, spending a couple $1,000s on like one piece of equipment. But she said she felt like she had no one better to spend it on, including herself.
Including herself.
And this is when he's like kind of with her, kind of not.
Yeah.
And
I mean, we're going to get a lot into the way her parents parented her. But I do think that this is one of those things that happens that like if your kids, they can't date and you don't or you hate the person that they're dating,
yeah,
and you forbid them from dating them, then they're not going to be able to like talk to you and like form a healthy,
yeah,
way of like having that relationship.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I completely agree. I think when there's no communication, when the only communication is like you're forbidden and we're never talking about it again.
Yes.
That to me just doesn't seem like a healthy way because you're stifling growth from everybody.
Right. And exactly. And also it's telling Jennifer she can't talk to you about a number of things, including how she's feeling about anything.
She should be scared to talk to you about,
yes,
things. And it's like, if she's getting in relationships, there are conversations maybe she'd want to have with her mom about some things.
Exactly.
And she feels like she can't.
And not
it.
Putting all of her self-worth in this on again, off again boyfriend relationship.
Right.
Yeah.
Finally, we get some grainy footage from a neighbor's camera.
But it's kind of the first evidence we like the neighborhood is in a total uproar about like, are these people still on the loose? Who even are they? And up to this point, I was kind of like, I don't even necessarily believe Jennifer's story.
Yeah.
So now like from the neighbor's house across the street, there's a security camera pointing at Jennifer's house. And it does show three individuals entering the house at some point in the night and leaving 30 minutes later. They say one exited quickly and a short time later, two more people exit the house.
Well, at first we see them go in and out. And at first I'm like, that's just a big blob.
Right.
Is that anything? And the cops are like, there are three men there. Definitely. Three black guys, Jillian. Shut up.
Yeah.
And I'm,
yeah,
like, it looks like one big blob from across the street.
Yeah.
Now, 30 minutes later, when we see them run out, I'm like, okay, I see three different blobs,
yes,
this time.
Yeah, it's not going to give us anything in terms of what they look like, but it is going to tell
it's
us.
It's like
that,
movement.
And it's three,
you know,
individuals, so we know that part of the story is true.
Right. And it's like, okay, we see them go in and go out, but there's no forced entry, so what the hell?
Like, somebody let them in.
Like, what's going on,
and
right?
Jennifer said in her own interview there was no doorbell, so, I mean, unless they knocked lightly, you know what I mean?
Someone was expecting them, it,
yes,
seems like to me.
Yes.
So the cops are like, all right, we got to talk to Jennifer again. And,
yep,
here we go, because they need to talk to her about like what they saw on this footage and maybe she can help them in some way or,
yes,
just like we'll get some more of the truth. So this is her second interview.
It's day four of the investigation.
And she is really nervous. And she's like, her body language is, you don't have to be an expert to know she's a nervous wreck. And she says as much.
Yep.
She's just like very nervously.
And like, I mean, you think about the trauma she's been through. Her mom is dead. Her dad is very likely going to die. Mm-hmm. She survived a horrendous ordeal, if what she's saying is true. She was tied to a banister. And, you know, it's bad. And so they ask her about her relationship with Daniel. And she tells us what we already know. It was really rough. They met in high school. It lasted about 6 years. She wasn't supposed to have a boyfriend.
Yeah, she was hiding the relationship from her parents. And they ask her, because remember, we already spoke to Daniel.
Yes.
So we know about these threatening text messages. So they're just like, any weird, like, threatening behavior on your phone?
And she says she's been, like, receiving threatening messages, but she believes they're coming from Daniel's girlfriend. Now, this is the first we're hearing about this at all.
Right. So her name is Christine. Daniel mentioned her earlier.
Yeah.
But Jennifer's like, well, I think the anonymous calls and messages are from Christine.
Why do you believe it's her?
Because she has personally messaged me on Facebook, telling me that I'm stupid. And sometimes when I text him, she texts me using his phone, telling me that he's with his girlfriend Christine and to leave him alone.
So, like, if Jennifer texts Daniel to say hi, Christine, the girlfriend, will, like, grab his phone and be like, leave my boyfriend alone.
Yeah.
Or message Jennifer menacingly to leave her boyfriend alone.
And the cop is like, why didn't you tell us this before?
And it also seems like this is something Daniel would know about.
Yes.
That these two women are fighting, which he's probably loving.
Exactly.
So.
And Jennifer does say, like, with everything that, like, you were interviewing me, like, an hour after my mother was murdered, so, and I was tied to a banister, and my life was threatened, so, like, maybe this didn't come into my head. I didn't necessarily think it was important, which I think is fair.
Yeah.
You know?
Eventually, though, Jennifer's parents find out that she was secretly dating Daniel kind of on and off. Because Daniel is playing both sides of the fence here. He's like on and off with Jennifer and on and off with Christine as well. So her parents, when Jennifer's parents find out, they are extremely upset. And Jennifer says to the cops, like, especially her father.
Yeah. And like the dad gives her an ultimatum. He literally makes her choose Daniel or her family, which means I think the implication is you pick Daniel, you're out on the street, you have no money, you are completely cut off, you are dead to us. And so, like, of course she has no choice but to pick her family.
Well, she picks her family. She picks them both. Because she picks her family and then secretly is calling Daniel all the time.
And it's like, Dad, is that what you want? Because that's the only possible outcome here. Is that really how you want to do this?
It just breeds deceit.
Yes.
And that
and
is never
resentment.
Good. And resentment.
You know what I mean?
It's never good.
Yeah. And at this point in Jennifer's life, she's a full-grown fucking adult is the other thing.
She's like 24.
Exactly.
So then she gets caught again that she's like secretly seeing Daniel.
That's when they took away my cell phone. And they said that they'd drive me places. And so pretty much I wake up, I do my piano studies. I may go see my teacher for lessons, but that's pretty much it.
She's 24 years old.
They had to drive her everywhere.
Yes.
So she was 24, sort of like, Mom, can I go to the wherever I had to go?
It's just kind of insane that, like, also you haven't raised a kid who has the life skills to go out and get a job on their own and, like, live independently. I would never want Daisy to be this dependent on me at 24 years
old.
Well,
it seems to me that this is all part of their punishment to her.
Yes,
to keep her and, like, sort of, like, train her to do what they wanted to do.
And it seems like they want to pick the husband for her.
Yeah, I mean, they seem to have a plan that is not
in line with what Jennifer wants.
Right.
Yes.
So her life was super, super strict at this point.
Yeah.
And we get the sense that it's been strict her whole life. But right now she describes her day was like she would wake up, she'd rehearse piano, she'd go to the piano lessons. And she says, quote, that was pretty much it.
Yeah. We meet her piano teacher, Fernando, and he said that the dad would literally walk her to his door for the lessons. But he also says she was absolutely the best of the best. She was winning all the competitions every year. Her parents put thousands of dollars into her piano education. Yeah. We're not going to learn until later that Jennifer was not a great student and that there was a ton of pressure on her to be the best at everything, and she wasn't living up to that in her parents' eyes. But she was the absolute best at the piano. Like, they describe her kind of like as a prodigy.
Yeah, but my question is, did she like it?
No, right, because the teacher describes the parents' dedication to her piano lessons, not Jennifer's.
Right. So Jennifer, one day at piano, opens up to Fernando and kind of breaks down.
My parents, they don't trust me. Where I go, they follow me around. They don't want me to go out with my boyfriend. He's not acceptable to my father. He won't allow me to waste time to go out with a cook. they are just driving me crazy.
They're following me around. They hate my boyfriend. They look down on him. Like, they don't want me to waste time with a guy who works at a pizza place. They're driving me crazy. I don't know what to do. And again, she's 24 years old.
I gotta say, the "they're driving me crazy" really stood out to me here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, Jennifer is a kid who needs somebody to, like, help her.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She's, like, not living up to her parents' expectations. Her parents are running her life. I'm not making any excuses for what we're gonna learn later down the road, but, like, it's, she's in an impossible situation.
Because when you're saying, like, her grades weren't great, you get the sense that, like, B plus is the end of the world.
Exactly. Exactly.
And in some houses, a B plus is freaking awesome.
I mean, my God, I was like a B minus student.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
So Jennifer tells the cops just more about, like, her parents hated Daniel, really looked down on him.
But she also is talking about how, like, she had a plan for herself after high school. She really wanted to go into kinesiology, which I looked up as the study of movement.
Yeah.
And her dad wanted her to do something that would make more money. So she says, like, my dad knew I didn't have the stomach to be a doctor, which is what he really wanted me to be. Like, a kinesiologist, I don't know if that's a doctorate degree. I don't know what it is, but, like, it's a thing that it's a human anatomy thing that she was really interested in, that she really wanted to do. And the dad says, no, it's not going to make enough money. You're going to become a pharmacist.
Yeah. And I Googled the salaries, and apparently you do get paid more as a pharmacist.
But I mean,
that's not like it matters. I'm just saying that was his point.
But the other point is, like, you won't let her have the boyfriend she wants. You won't let her have the car or the cell phone because she's disobeying you. Now you're choosing her future for her.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, the medical field, like, what her expertise or concentration in the medical field isn't exactly what you want, so she has to go a different... It's like, just even the over, like, the bigger picture isn't enough for them.
I want to be really clear about two things here. I understand that he is a victim, and nothing that happened to him should ever have happened to him, no matter what he did in his life. I also understand that they are an immigrant family that comes from their own traditions and their own, you know, their own way. I'm not, like, judging the tradition. I'm just saying, from an outsider's perspective, I see where this is headed.
Well, it can't end well, because you just breed deceit and your anger.
Yes.
Everyone's angry at each other.
And also, no one's talking about that part.
No,
you know,
it's not
like the dad is saying, I'm, like, I'm running your life and let's, like, sit down and talk about it and I'm going to hear you out. Like, Jennifer does not feel seen. She does not feel heard. She makes horrendous, evil, unforgivable choices.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, I can see how this monster gets made.
Well, her friend Nam from high school says kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
Because he's like, look, we went to a high school where there was a ton of pressure on us.
Yes.
He says, we were all expected to be doctors, lawyers, engineers. He's like, maybe an accountant,
yes,
but probably not. And he says, there was a lot of pressure from when we were super young. This is Nam's experience in this school specifically.
Yeah.
That it was all about, like, you're just focusing on high paying jobs. Not like, what feeds you? What do you want to do? It was just like, whatever is the highest salary, that's what you should do.
And he says, like, for Jennifer, it was really bad because she wasn't even close to being in the top of the class. He says, not even within earshot. And it's like, either you're in the top 10 of your class or nothing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, my God.
I mean, it's like the pressure is just unbelievable.
And again, it just makes her lie even more. So Jennifer lies to her parents.
I lied to him.
What did you lie to him? What did you tell him?
That I was going to school.
For?
For science.
For science.
Bachelor of Science.
And, did your mom know that you weren't going to university?
No.
So both your parents thought you had gone to university?
Yes.
You gotta be shitting me.
Detective Bill goes, you've gotta be shitting me.
What I didn't really understand, we will get to it, but my first question here was, like, if they were so obsessed with her education, how was she able to lie? Like, wouldn't they be really involved in the application process? Wouldn't they want to see the acceptance letter? Wouldn't they kind of make a big deal of celebrating all of that?
Uh-huh.
So they would, like, drive her to campus because they had to drive her everywhere. They drop her off.
And, like, they would drive her down to Toronto. Girl, we're going to find out she's a document forger.
I know.
She's a document forger.
Let me tell you, I think I've mentioned this before. I knew someone who was lying to his fiance that he was going to school and wasn't.
What was he doing all day?
With his girlfriend, his other girlfriend.
No!
You know how she found out?
How?
Netflix. It was like, continue watching. And she was like, continue watching? Like, we haven't been watching this.
No.
And she put
way.
It together.
Netflix.
Literally driving him to class.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I'm going to, like, get my... Because, see, the guy was kind of like, just, he needed to get back on the right foot.
Yeah.
You know? And she kind of gave him a little bit of a, like, look, I love love you. I will do this. But like, you have to, I put in all the effort.
Yeah.
Like, you got to work with me on this. So if you're really going to say that you're going to do this, you can't just like sit at home and fuck around.
Yeah.
Like, you have to sort of do this with me because I'm not doing this by myself. He was like, yeah. Had another girlfriend.
Oh my God.
Like, she would. So this happens. It is horrifying.
I
like, people
screamed.
Just live these separate worlds, but Netflix got them.
But see, the other thing about Jennifer doing this is that like, eventually you're going to have to graduate and eventually you're going to have to get a, like, there is a ticking time clock.
And you're just kicking it down.
And if you remember, Jennifer would have started university when she was 18. She's 24 now. Like, she's coming to, the lies are all going to catch up with her.
And so what happened is that we learned, and I Googled, because this documentary leaves a lot out. So she was faking paperwork.
Ugh.
But she would also like take notes. So she would go and like get the books at the library.
Oh my God.
And make fake notebooks. Like, she was faking her high school report cards because she didn't graduate high school. They don't mention that.
She didn't?
She was faking all of it. But it was also like, that's a lot of work.
It's so much work.
To do it. Then just take the real notes.
I know
that is so much to say. I know that makes me sound like an, because it's not, her heart isn't in it.
Uh-huh.
And it's just, and I get it. And she's had her whole life of just being told what to do. I totally understand. But this is what she was going through.
Yeah.
So she could be like, look at the notes for my pharmacist. She was literally learning how to do the thing, just not at the college that they thought she was going to.
I mean, it's just insane. It's like, going back to Nam, the friend from high school, he's saying,
expectation is definitely not just specific to the Vietnamese culture, but it is definitely a hard style of parenting, and it can definitely make or break a child. You know, if you're in an environment where you're expected to come out on top every single time and you're failing to meet that expectation, I think that could lead to disastrous results.
That kind of pressure can break a kid.
It can break it, of course.
I mean, especially like a young, impressionable kid who like doesn't really have a lot of direction, is already feeling stifled and suffocated, you know, like to the point that she's like faking, because when she graduates,
air quotes, graduates,
right, like there's this moment where the mom, where one of the friends tells us the mom was so confused as to why Jennifer couldn't get a job as a pharmacist when she graduated, like, but it's because Jennifer didn't really graduate. Because
CVS was like, girl.
Right.
I know Photoshop when I see it.
She forged a false degree from the University of Toronto. She forged it.
Yeah.
Like, and I was thinking, her parents didn't want to go to graduation.
You know, there's always some kind, I don't know.
Yeah.
So, but the cops are like, okay, if she's capable of telling very big lies for years, like life-changing lies, what else is she lying about?
Right. And because, you know, this is back when we were with the detectives who are like, we've gone over this 911 call 100 times.
And it's, the documentary starts with a 911 call,
yes.
And it is, she is screaming.
Yes.
It is chilling.
Right. And she's saying that she was tied to a banister, but somehow was able to make a call from her cell phone. How is that possible?
So let's go through this, right? Because I did this.
You did.
I urge you to do this too.
Okay.
So the cops ask her about it. They're like, how was she able? She was tied to the banister, but then
her hands behind her back.
Her hands behind her back. Because she's like, I was tied so tightly. And they're like, can you show us?
Take it out of a traumatizing event, which it is, and put yourself into a more clinical position, because I want to see how you could physically get your phone out of your waistband. Just stand up and focus in on how you did it.
Can you show us?
Yeah.
And so she's like, well, can I just tell you? And I'm like, no, girl.
No, girl.
So the cops are like, I super hear you. I understand you're traumatized. But for the sake of solving this crime, like, can you show me how you were able to get your phone out of your back pocket? So I don't know if she was sitting or standing, but put your phone in your back pocket if you can, right? So she's standing up and her wrists are touching together.
Hang on. I'm doing it in real time.
Right?
Okay. I stood up.
We're standing up. Okay.
Yep.
So you got your phone here. Keep your wrists together.
Yep.
Move your hand with your wrists completely together and take your phone out of your back pocket, keeping your wrists together.
Okay, got it.
And then flip it around. Now move your hands over, like over your waist, to see if you can call. Can you dial 911?
Absolutely not.
Now you can do, and you're like, well, maybe if you do the emergency thing, do you?
Yeah, I look pretty cute.
I'm sure you do. But see how difficult that is?
Now, I can't even see my phone.
Right. So you know how you can do like the emergency thing?
Yeah.
I don't know if she didn't say she did that.
No.
She said she called 911.
Right, yeah.
So we can sit down now.
Okay. Okay,
so, Aaron, I don't know if that worked for video, but try it at home, because what happens
I couldn't even see my phone.
Because she says her upper arm is tied to the banister, like above her elbow.
Yeah.
Everything we were just doing, our elbows were moving. So she right. wouldn't have been able to do that.
No.
And her hands were tied together. Now, when she shows them, because we see the video.
Yeah.
She goes, it's in her hands behind my back. The volume was on max. She's yelling into the phone. And when we see the video, her hands are like this.
Right.
So
right.
she
yes.
can't keep her no. wrists together doing it. And she's like, there it is. So she looks really awkward. I'm sure it would be. And when you're trying to rescue yourself, it's fine.
Yeah.
But like, you can't, it just doesn't make any sense.
And what I always love in these moments is that they don't gotcha her right there. They're not like, we gotcha. We gotcha.
Right.
They like let her think that she's proven her case.
Right. Like, Aaron, I'll send you the screenshot of this. Her one hand is totally,
yeah.
her hands are not tied.
They're not
at
tied.
All,
right. Yeah.
At
yeah.
all. So then they're like, that's red flag number one. And it's a big
it's
one.
It's a big one.
Red flag
and it's a doozy.
It's a doozy. The next red flag, why did they leave her alive? Like, she was, like, allowed to make that phone call because she's screaming.
Yeah.
We hear the 911 call.
Yeah.
Why would they leave her as a witness?
And her only, because they're like, they killed your mom. They were trying to kill your dad.
The elephant in the room is, why would you leave a surviving witness? It's not, it doesn't make sense. If you're going to shoot two people, you're going to shoot the third.
Why would they not do the same to you?
The only thing I can say is he said I cooperated.
Because I cooperated. Now, I thought...
But did she? She's screaming to 911.
No, but I thought that was a pretty good answer to come up with in the moment. You know what I mean?
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
Red flag number three. We're not done.
Yep.
They learn about yet another major lie that Jennifer has told them.
Yes.
Because they ask her about life insurance.
Right.
And they're like, does anyone in the family have a policy on them? And Jennifer's like, I used to have one.
Right.
Half of that went to my education, and then they found out that I lied, and
yeah.
so they took the money back. And the cops are like, I'm sorry.
Wait a second.
Wait a second. So they did know that you lied about college? Because
yeah.
before you said that they didn't know. So there was like, okay, major resentment just with how they were raising you,
yeah.
basically. And then they found out that your whole life was a lie?
Yeah.
And you lied to us about the lie?
Right.
Where does it end?
I'd say, Jennifer, like, you just, like, she just, like, no one ever gets away with it.
It
no
does,
one ever gets
no
away
one
with
ever
it.
Gets away with it.
No.
Because she says, like, and this is a direct quote, I told them that I graduated, but I never went to university, that I went for 2 years, but I never finished.
Uh-huh. It's just word soup. It makes no sense.
It makes no sense.
Yeah.
Now
I sat there for 5 minutes trying to make it make sense, but then I was like, wait, this doesn't make any sense.
You know what I did?
What?
I Googled.
Okay.
And I found this really comprehensive, great article on TorontoLife.com.
Oh.
So go. But what happened was, she told them that she'd graduated college and that she was volunteering at a place called Sick Kids, which is a real hospital for sick kids.
Oh my God.
Sounds fake.
Oh my God.
I'm sorry, but it's
yeah.
real. But they realized that she didn't have.
We need to open a gay bar called Thirsty Gays.
I mean,
Thirsty Gays on 9th Avenue would be a great idea.
But
I would go.
It would be like thirst traps.
Hey, that's what I mean.
Yeah, we'd need a lot of photo booths,
yeah.
like if you're photo ready.
We did it.
We did it. So they realized, though, her parents, like, she didn't have a uniform or any ID, so her parents followed her and realized that she wasn't working at the hospital. And then, like, that sort of unraveled, like, so you're not working at this hospital. Why aren't you working at the hospital? And that's how they found out that she never went to college and she had been staying with Daniel.
Yes.
She was living with him.
Yes.
And that's when they told her, you can't see Daniel anymore.
I mean, right. And
so there's a lot here.
And we'll learn a little bit more later that her parents maybe weren't as strict as she's saying they were.
I think it was pretty bad.
Yeah.
I think it was pretty strict. I'm not excusing anything.
I mean, to like be forging documents about graduating high school, forging documents about graduating college, then to be lying about where you're working to the
yeah.
point that your parents are following you. Like, Jennifer needs help.
She needs help.
When kids don't feel seen, they don't feel heard, they don't feel like they can talk to anybody or they
that's
can
it.
Trust
they
anybody.
Run.
Of course.
They run
and
in
they
any way
out.
They know how. And
yes.
sometimes that's literally running to Photoshop and running. Like, that's what happens.
Yeah.
But now in this, they got her, right? They have
yes.
these three big red flags. She knows the phone contortionist thing
didn't work.
And she is terrified. She has her hand on her chest. You can see her heart
yeah,
beating through this
the
push.
Jig is up.
I mean, but she's trembling. You could tell, like, it's kind of rare that we see this, someone being so like, oh my God.
Yes.
Like really shaking
yes.
and trembling like this.
Yeah. I mean, she like, can you imagine? Like there was no, like she put no planning into this.
Yeah.
You know, you're never going to get away with it.
And the cops are saying what you've been saying, like, Jennifer, just level with us. You must have had a lot of anger and resentment towards your parents
right.
because they basically locked you in that house. You were lying to them constantly.
Yeah.
And Jennifer's like, no.
At the end of the day, I love my parents and I chose to be with them. And if I wanted to, I could have just left, but I didn't. I wanted to stay with them and take care of them.
But you didn't didn't choose to be with them. Right. You were lying to get out of the house.
And Detective Bill is like watching on the CCTV camera and he's watching her in that interrogation room. He's like, it is so obvious that she's not telling us everything. Like her body language, the way she's grooming herself, she's so nervous, like she's touching her stomach. And
yeah.
He's like, she definitely knows something, but like the only other witness is her dad and we can't interview him because he's in a medically induced coma.
So Jennifer, they give Jennifer a break from the interview and yeah. Detective Deborah, the victim liaison officer, she comes in.
Yeah.
She's like, hey, like, how are you? Offers Jennifer some water, offers her a bathroom break. And Jennifer's like, you know, I'm really rattled. I'm trying to do my best. Maybe the choices I made in my life weren't that great. And Detective Deborah's like, you know what? You live, you learn.
Right.
You can't worry.
And she's like, as long as you're telling the truth, girl, you're telling the truth, right?
Like now, yeah. If you had to lie to get out of that bad situation, we totally get it.
Yeah.
And Jennifer goes, it's just like pieces here and pieces there. And I don't want to say anything wrong.
Yes.
And Detective Deborah's like, well, as long as you tell them the truth, it doesn't matter where the pieces fall.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, but also call a lawyer.
I know.
Also
yeah,
don't. You
I
know
mean,
what I mean?
Like, she's pacing and, like, she's clearly lying.
And Deborah, like, you know, Deborah drives her home after the interview. She's like, she was really quiet. And, like, I know she's been lying about going to the university, but Deborah sees it differently. She's like, I'm the children of Caribbean immigrants. I understand the kind of pressure that Jennifer was under.
Yeah.
Just because she lied about going to university does not mean she lied about having something to do with the murder of her parents.
She said, based on the pressure that she learned about through Jennifer and Jennifer's friends and her yeah. experience, she goes, there's a lot of gray here.
Yes.
It's not really as cut and dry as some people who didn't grow up in that situation could think, you know?
But we're about to break Deborah's heart because Mr. Pan is about to wake up from his coma.
The only other witness and her father.
Yes.
And he tells the cops what happened that night.
Yeah, he says he went to bed early around 8:30. His wife went out line dancing. As we know, Jennifer was at home. He says he was awoken by a man with a gun who tells him to get up and come downstairs. He sees his wife in the living room. She's hysterical. She keeps saying, we don't have any money. Can you just let us go?
Right.
And the men are like telling her to shut up.
Yeah. The chaos of yelling and screaming and maybe a language barrier, there's
yes.
a little truth in that.
So there's two couches in the living room. He says he's on one being pistol whipped.
Ugh.
And Mrs. Pan is on the other couch begging for her life.
And while this is happening, Jennifer walks down the stairs in the company of one of the suspects. She's without bindings on her hands and appears to be in friendly conversation.
She's without bindings on her hands and appears to be in a friendly conversation.
She's not tied up in the banister.
No.
That was a big Columbo ruse we just
right.
did with the phone in the back pocket. That was bullshit.
And Detective Bill goes, you gotta be fucking kidding me.
You gotta be fucking kidding me. Everything, and I mean everything Jennifer said to them was a lie.
Yes.
Except for the fact that maybe they were yelling a little.
Yes,
but,
yes.
But her dad was like, they were palling around like old friends.
I mean, can you imagine, like, can you imagine him seeing that, knowing
right.
she's behind this?
And then you get out of a car. Coma,
yes.
And you sort of face reality. And as the cops are talking to Mr. Pan, he says, use your police techniques to find out what Jennifer did.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
My God.
Yes. And Detective Bill is like, at this point, I know Jennifer is involved somehow. We are sending armed fucking guards to the
yeah.
hospital. We are not letting her alone in a room with that man ever, ever, ever.
Now, day 14 of the investigation, interview number 3, Jennifer has yet to ask for a lawyer.
Yeah.
I can't believe that she's back here alone after that last interview.
Yeah.
That interview where she was, I mean, about to throw up. You could see her trembling through the grainy footage. She shows up alone.
I wonder why. Like, I wonder what the thinking is. Does she feel like she's going to have to admit it to the lawyer? Like, what is the thinking here?
I mean, I don't know. Thank God, I don't know.
You know, does it, like, I mean, at the end of this thing, she's maintaining her innocence. Like, does it go to her being actually innocent? Her thinking that, like, if I just tell them everything I know,
yeah.
you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't. So Jennifer's talking to Bill Gates. Not that Bill Gates. G-O-E-T-Z.
Yeah.
But now she's going up against Bill Gates, a detective who was trained in identifying and detecting lies. In him, Jennifer's met her match.
Quote, trained in identifying and detecting lies.
And Detective Bill is saying, like, we are no longer watching this shit on the CCTVs. We are right behind that fucking mirror.
Yeah.
You know, the mirror and the interrogation.
Oh, yeah.
Totally.
So the first thing he does, this is such a tactic, is change locations.
Wait, you think that was a ruse?
100%.
Oh, because he's like, oh, I can't get the technology to work in here. We got it. Wait, why?
To totally throw her off her game.
Uh-huh. Because she's been in that same interrogation room, like, the whole time.
Yeah, and it's just sort of like, oh, yeah, okay, just to kind of keep her on her toes a little bit. That's a huge tactic. fact, it's not just with cops, but it's even in like negotiations or just to like get the other person not feeling as confident as maybe they were when they first walked in, changing the environment. So he tries to make small talk with her in the last 2 seconds because he's like, how long have you been playing the piano? I used to play a little myself. Anyway, let's talk about your parents.
Bill Gates is on it. I got to tell you, Bill Gates is really knows what he's doing.
And then he basically talking about the pressure and there are all these expectations. And Jennifer confesses to forging all the documents, like her student loan papers, report cards. She was Photoshopped for all of it.
Was any of that fun for her, do you think?
I think maybe a little.
You know?
I think it was something she could control.
Yeah.
It was a little bit of a symbol of freedom.
Uh-huh.
It felt like if I do this, maybe they'll get off my back and maybe they'll... But there's no communication there. No one's being honest.
Uh-huh.
So it could never end well. You know, it was never going to be like, you know what? You're right. They're never going to stop caring and stop wanting you to be what they want. You know, it never ends.
It's like, Steve will kill me if I don't mention, there's like a character in The Glass Menagerie. I think her name is Laura, the daughter.
Oh, yeah.
Who like pretends to have a job at like as a secretary and like goes to the park all day long.
Uh-huh.
And then comes home and like, because she's like...
Steve's the world's biggest Glass Menagerie fan. If you don't mention Laura, God damn it. That's the gentleman caller play, right?
It's so good. I saw it with the Celia Keenan Bolger in that role on Broadway. And because it's a memory play, the way she... When I used to have a theater podcast, she was my favorite guest and I'd have her on all the time. And we would always talk about her, like, she entered through the couch. So, like, because it's a memory play,
sure.
He reaches in and pulls her out of the couch.
That's amazing.
I'm getting... Like, Celia's this tiny little person and, like, I'm just getting chills thinking about
That's
it.
Amazing.
Like, it was a perfect production.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Anyway,
you're welcome, Steve.
You're welcome. But Jennifer says,
you know, I wasn't happy with any parts of my life. My friends were moving on with their lives, and it felt that I wasn't going anywhere. I was kind of being left behind.
All of my friends had moved on. Like, Jennifer felt left behind.
Steve is the biggest Glass Menagerie fan in the world.
Don't forget it.
If I go home having not mentioned the Glass Menagerie, I am in so much fucking trouble.
You better.
I mean, it's like, I can't believe, what are we? We're 50 minutes into this thing. I haven't mentioned the Glass Menagerie. I can't believe it.
That's on you, girl. You knew better.
I saved it, though. I'm not in trouble.
So Jennifer tells the cops she was really depressed.
Yeah.
She wanted to be with this guy, Daniel. Daniel had moved on. Her friends had moved on. Her friends grew up and had jobs and lives and families.
Because they all actually graduated high school and went to university.
And they're all 24.
I'm not saying that that's what you have to do, but Jennifer, like, you just faked it.
Yeah.
All I can think about is that this girl was really suffering. It started in high school and like it went all the way through until now. And it's like all anybody wanted to do was control her. Nobody wanted to actually see her and help her.
Yeah.
And I'm once again not excusing her vile, evil, unforgivable things that she did. But like this is how we get there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Of course. So this guy's talking to her. He's not like yelling at her, but he's like in her face and telling her that she was involved. And Jennifer finally kind of snaps and she's like crying and
Wait, we're going to miss the part. Wait, can we go back just a quick second? Because we learned that Bill Gates is allowed to lie, right?
Oh,
and
God.
Bill Gates tells her, by the way, girl, and Detective Bill is like, and also Jennifer had no idea that he's allowed to lie, so we can say anything to this girl and she'll believe us.
Uh-huh.
Bill Gates tells Jennifer that, you know, the satellites that are up in the sky?
Uh-huh.
Now, do you know what satellites can do? Did you watch any of these war programs on TV where you can see the satellite honing in on buildings? And basically, if people are moving around in a house, it's like an x-ray, okay? Are the people in the positions that the witnesses are telling us they were in?
So he's basically saying the satellites work like an x-ray to your ceiling so we can see if you were actually tied to the banister, like you said.
And it's just working 24 hours a day around the entire world like Santa.
Totally. That was such a brazen lie that I was like, oh my God, who believes that?
You know who can fact check that for me? My lawyer.
I know. Well, honestly.
So eventually Jennifer finally says, and she's like crying and like whispering and whimpering so we can't hear her at first. But basically what she says is, no, these guys weren't there to kill my parents. They were supposed to kill me. I was such a disappointment. I didn't want to live anymore.
Yeah.
So the story she tells now is that she paid someone $2,000 to come in and kill her. And they were in touch about it. There were all these texts. They were going to call her. She was going to let them in.
Yeah.
And this guy goes by the name Homeboy.
This is a total bullshit
story. And it's like, then why? We have the 911 call. We've listened to it. So what?
Right. The story is a total lie. But once again, did she come up with this in the moment? Because if she did, like, it's thinking on her feet.
But it's really stupid because the minute her phone is mentioned, they're like, we need a warrant for your phone, girl.
Right.
So then they, and like the shit they uncover on her phone is the entire case.
I just think that when you get to this point, you're just trying to survive the moment.
I think so,
you're
too.
Not even thinking long term at all, because clearly they're going to get her phone and see what really happened.
No, every time she forged a piece of paper, she wasn't thinking about anything farther than hitting print or whatever.
Right, yeah.
Like there was no thinking ahead here.
No, and like instantly they see in her phone records that Daniel is connected to Homeboy, and we see the text messages from Jennifer saying, like, we can be together. All we got to do is get your friend Homeboy to kill my parents. And Daniel's like, girl, I don't want to be with you, though. Yeah. And she's like, well, then call it off. And he's like, but you said you wanted them to do it whether or not we were together or not. Like,
yeah, don't you want this for you? Don't you want to escape? And she's like, no, if you're not going to be with me, then I don't want my parents dead.
But then my question is, like, why did it still happen? Because, you know, we're going to learn that, like, Jennifer, the night of the crime, gets a text from Homeboy saying, like, are we ready? Like, game on. She could have called it off at any time. She doesn't. And so basically, like, we kind of learn, the police tell us they have a clear picture of what happened that night, which is that Jennifer gets the text from Homeboy saying it's game time. She waits until the mom comes home from dancing. She goes down and says goodnight. She walks over, pretends like she's locking the door, but she actually unlocks it, which is how, remember, there was no forced entry and there was no doorbell.
And then went back upstairs where she continued to text with the suspects. We believe that she then turned the lights on and off, signaling for them to come into the house. And then she went back to her bedroom to wait for it to unfold.
And she goes back into her bedroom and just lets the events unfold.
Yeah, and also played a major part of it
by
acting on this 911 call.
Exactly.
And there's nothing in these texts that they're telling us or that I found in my side googling that was her trying to call it off.
No.
Or her trying to say, like, I'm going to be acting. Or, like, there's no, I don't know. There's,
no, I mean, like, the cop says, like, he's like, this is a bullshit story. She hired these guys to kill her parents. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The dad was not supposed to live.
Yeah. She's arrested for murder, attempted murder, and conspiracy to commit murder.
Yeah.
And after the arrest, the cops find her diary. And it talks about how restrictive her parents were. And because Daniel had weed on him that one time, he's now this big time drug dealer in their eyes.
Yeah.
And so, like, she wanted to have this fairy tale relationship with Daniel, and it just wasn't happening. And Daniel didn't want it.
Right. But that's what they're saying. There's, like, that one sentence about the parents, and the rest of it is about Daniel and the puppy dogs and the rainbows and how she wanted to marry him.
And they're convinced that these anonymous phone calls and texts are coming from Jennifer.
Of course they are.
You know?
Of course they are.
And it's like, okay, so then why did they do this? Like, why is Daniel so involved?
Well,
why did Jennifer do this?
We get some answers on that because we learn that
there's the financial gain, the insurance, the house. A part of that was going to be hers.
Jennifer was going to come in to a reasonable $500,000.
Just right down there.
And Daniel probably thought he can influence Jennifer and have access to this money.
For all we know, Daniel actually was, like, wooing her fakely, you know, to get, like, because I think that the parents are only dead because that was her path to Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe she's thinking, like, I'll get him back whether he wants me or not. Who knows?
Or freedom to do whatever she wants as a 25-year-old.
But it's just, like, you were always going to get caught. There was no plan to actually get away with this.
No.
You were always going to get caught.
Also, this is not Jennifer's first attempt at murder.
I know. I know. They say, much to their surprise, we learned that she'd approached a friend 10 months earlier, asked him to kill the father, paid the kid to do so. It didn't end up happening, but it showed that she'd been planning this for a long time.
And her father has said, like, I told Jennifer that she can't see Danny Wong anymore, and she can only see him over my dead body. You have to wait till I'm dead.
Yeah.
And then all these conversations start happening about how she's going to kill her father.
Yeah. Yeah. And they say, like, right at the end, like, the saddest part of this whole thing is that we know that her mother's last words were, don't hurt my daughter.
God.
I know.
So in 2014, Jennifer Pan is found guilty of the first degree murder of her mother and attempted murder of her father. And so they were all, like, Jennifer Pan, Daniel Wong, and their co-accused is what the on-screen text says. They were sentenced to life in prison with no chance of parole for 25 years. Then her father was granted a lifetime no contact order.
I know.
But they appealed. It says, following a successful appeal against their conviction for the first degree murder of Bik Ha Pan, all of the accused have been granted a new trial. And we're going to see, they're thinking maybe probably late 2024 early 2025.
And now, is there, she's maintaining her innocence. Is she just saying that she hired them to kill her?
I don't know what her, I mean, she's finally as a lawyer, so she's not saying much.
Yeah.
But if you want to learn more about her life and her story, just look it up on torontolife.com. It's like Jennifer Pan, and yeah, it's her whole story. But there's a lot more to it about like how she lied, her dynamic with her family, her brother, yeah. like what she, there's like a lot here. And I feel like we didn't really scratch the surface on this doc.
Oh.
My God.
Oh, girl, we covered What Jennifer Did. I remember what it was called.
Yay.
Fam, just last time I'm going to mention this for a while, but yesterday I dropped the first few episodes of my new podcast. It's called the Golden Girls Deep Dive Podcast. If you love the Golden Girls and you want a recap show that also really gets into like all the trivia about the Golden Girls, we have a full-time researcher that's helping us do deep dives on little things from the Golden Girls universe. It's really fun. It's funny. I make it with the wonderful Jennifer Simard. Woo. Go find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Episodes 1 and 2 are available right now.
Yay.
Also, can you please join our Facebook group? It's the True Crime Obsessed Podcast Discussion Group.
Yes.
It's where you come to make new friends. It's where you come to learn about all of the exciting meetups we're doing over the summer. It's where you, I don't know, just come to like make some community. There's like 50,000 people in there.
Yeah, I love the post where it's like, hey, you were just talking about my town.
Yeah, totally.
Hey, I know where that store is.
I know. I know. And then every now and then we'll get a picture of the Robert Durst house in Texas.
Yeah, or bears. A lot of people have bears in their backyards.
I know.
It's amazing.
What are we doing next, girl?
All right, so we are doing Still Missing Morgan on Hulu. It's 4 Fs. We're doing it in 2. We're doing that thing where we split them up.
Yep.
This is another wild case.
I started watching it on the plane the other day. It is crazy.
It's crazy. Yep. So 4 episodes of that on Hulu, but we're going to split it up. So we'll give you 2 in one ep and 2 on the other.
I'm so excited. Yeah. All right, fam, stay tuned for the trailer for that and our funny and hilarious outtakes if we have any.
If we have them.
I know. We love you.
All right, we love you. Bye.
All right, bye.
It's like any other day. Our friends invited us to come see one of their kids playing this little league baseball game.
Some other children wanted her to go play. She stopped to get the sand out of her shoes.
And that was the last time I saw her.
In 25 years of law enforcement here, Morgan is the only one we haven't found.
We started collecting video
in case we caught somebody that looked suspicious.
Well, a viewer may have caught the alleged kidnapper's truck on tape.
An older model red Ford pickup.
Kids had seen somebody in the parking lot, and he just grabbed her and took off.
We have 8,300 leads in her case.
Suspect composites, known offenders.
It's like a jigsaw puzzle.
His DNA matched up with murders in this area.
You're potentially looking at a serial killer.
I just want to find out what happened to my kid.
And my confidence in the case is high.
Not every child who is kidnapped dies.
People don't understand how you can keep relentlessly fighting. But Morgan is worth fighting for.
I also don't really know what Murphy's Law is.
Anything bad that can happen will happen.
Oh, great.
So it's like, that's why there's like a band called Murphy's Law. It's very like
oh,
Irish.
Oh, really?
Like, oh, if it's, you know, like the worst option is going to happen.
You really do know everything. Do you remember when you're like, I don't really know anything about the Beatles, but in 1963.
I Want to Hold Your Hand came out. Kill right. Me. Yeah. Obviously, everyone knows I Want to Hold Your Hand. She Loves You. Come on. Meet the Beatles.
I look, you're a Beatles aficionado.
Oh, God. I don't think that, new listener. Please don't come for me. I just love and respect them like most people do.
Except for John. The New York pizza in Boston was so bad. Like,
was
I can taste it right now.
What made it so bad? I don't get it.
It's like the dough wasn't good. The sauce was not good. You know what I mean? It wasn't ever cooked all the way because they were serving drunk college kids at 2 a.m.
Delicious.
I know.
You know what I mean? Like, pizza's just so good.
I know.
You know what I mean? That's why it's like, I'm not talking shit about anyone.
Fuck it, I'm having pizza for dinner tonight.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's good everywhere.
I know.
I don't know why we all have to fight about it, you know?
Do you like my pink shirt?
I do like your pink shirt.
How come? What? It's like pulling teeth to get a compliment out of you.
Oh,
the little
my
compliment.
Anyway,
how much do you like it?
This?
No, my pink shirt.
Oh, I was like, this situation. I love your pink shirt. I noticed it when we were on our Zoom call earlier.
But didn't say anything. Okay. So anyway, moving on.
Because I was at work. Okay. We were being recorded on another medium.
I say nice things to you at work all the time.
Oh my God. Here we go. Not anymore. Clearly.